Well, well, welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, and we're joining the search party to look for one single sheep. Today, everything's a competition, so we'll determine who's the mega in the kingdom of heaven. But before we feed ourselves with esteem and status and power, now that they've thrown out the idea that kids matter, let's drop a bomb on our favorite Mikros co-host, Maren and Barry. Good day, guys.
Just a couple of little ones over here.
Just suspending tiny co-host. It for an hour.
Temporarily.
Or so.
Yeah. Temporarily. Yeah. Yeah. The kids do matter. They do matter. Just not.
Just in theory and only for the next 60 minutes. Yes.
Yeah.
Kids. Now, let's just say kids don't matter.
Right. Did you pull that sound clip?
No, I got to figure out this computer. Remember last week I couldn't figure it out.
Anyways.
Guys, family business before we get into it. We're going to get into the details of Barry's sermon on Matthew 18 here in a minute. But first, we've got one more Between Sundays for the year, 2025.
Yeah.
Wild.
Wild. Do you know what number episode this is?
I was just going to ask that.
Really?
Well, this is season 17, so that'd probably make it we got to be close to 300 by now.
There's got to be a way to look that up. We should start numbering our episodes.
We used to number the episodes. I don't think we do anymore.
Yeah.
I was told that doesn't matter. So now we don't.
It matters to us.
Matters right now.
Yeah. So we're going to do that. Next week is our last pod. Jose Luis Gonzalez is going to be, I think he's going to be joining us. I don't totally know. Look into Christina. Producer Christina back there. He's in. So we're going to do that.
Great.
So it's Thanksgiving week. So it's been a great year of the show. Gotten lots of feedback. We got lots of questions from friends of the pod. I just wanted to thank all the friends of the pod because it's Thanksgiving week. What?
I you said that there were lots of questions and I,
yeah, just through this year,
just felt the
lots
fear.
Of lots of good questions from friends of the pod. Okay. They're never bad questions. You guys get bad questions probably, but not me. I get good questions for the pod. Thank you, friends of the pod, who watch, listen, reply, send questions, engage with us on Sundays, encourage us, all that stuff. During the week of Thanksgiving, I would be remiss if we didn't thank you guys. So thank you for engaging. All right, that's it. Guys, what's new with you?
What's new? It's Wizard of Oz.
Maren's a deer in headlights.
It's Wizard
with
of
that
Oz.
Question.
All
She's
the
deer
time
in headlights
for
with
me.
That question.
Every week.
I'll give you a second to think about it because for me, it's easy. It's just Wizard of
yeah.
Oz.
Yeah. How's that going?
I have
weekend
driven
down.
Between my house and Grace Church like 47 times in the last 3 days.
How are you holding up?
It's great. I'm having a blast. Liv, the Wicked Witch, my wife, is doing amazing. I'm so proud of her. And I've seen every single show. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shows I've seen so far. I'll see all 4 next weekend. I'm having a blast. I'm in it to win it. So.
And your voice is a little hoarse.
From all the shouting for Taco.
Specifically for Taco.
For Taco.
Taco's the name of the dog, right?
Yeah, yeah. Taco's playing Toto.
Yes.
Yes.
Unbelievable job by that dog because he's shaking like a leaf the entire time in the lobby. Like he's in the lobby, like getting pictures and he's shaking like a leaf. And I'm like, how does that dog just not like throwing up on stage?
Yeah.
I have to imagine it's stage fright. Like he's got stage fright.
If you look carefully, he really is a good actor because when they get to Munchkinland, he's looking around like in awe of like all these. It's so great.
Yeah.
I'm going to see the show a few more times and that'll
specifically
be,
look at Taco.
I'll take one show and just watch Taco.
Anyway,
he has like a special handler backstage. Like they're taking real good care.
It's just unbelievable how like much he wants to be held.
Yeah. Like I was wondering that. Why?
Or
is he willing to be?
Yeah.
Why
is
Dorothy's just squirming out of people's arms?
Dorothy's just holding them and he's just sitting there.
He's great.
Letting her hold him. I would like imagine at any point he'd like try to lick her face or like try to squirm his way out of there. No,
no.
He's just
chill.
Comfort. Content to be held.
But anyway,
he did a great job. Olivia did a great job.
She's in my opinion, she's just blowing me out of the water.
Yeah.
She never had done anything on the stage more, like 4 years ago. She did Little Mermaid as one of the sisters of Ariel. It's the first time she'd ever done anything performance theater wise. She used to do like, you know, choir and stuff. And she did FM Live. That was a Grace Kids choir thing back in the day. They did like worship leading. Anyway. So this is remarkable that she's got this role and she's crushing it in my opinion. And I mean, she's flying, she's throwing fire. She's, She's cackling. Yeah, it's great.
The best thing I thought, like, she did great and all the things you just said. Yeah. I think the best thing she did was she walked like a witch.
Yeah.
Like she's like walking, like
she's
bent
got
over.
The physicality. Yeah. She's got the.
I was like, man, all the new, like, I never would have seen that coming, but she's walking like bent over. Yeah. And, yeah, if she would had walked like straight up, like normal.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't have probably even noticed it, but she's got the witch walk.
For totally. Me, it's her cackle. It's her, she's flying through the air and she's got that perfect maniacal laugh, that witch cackle. Amazing. Yeah.
There's, I don't know if she isn't really quite doing it every show, but there's a subtle hint. If, you know, that Wicked is based on Wizard of Oz and Wicked is a very different story and it's not the same witch at all. The Wicked Witch is very wicked. In Wicked, she's actually really good anyway. But there's a part where she's flying through the sky, and as she's leaving the stage, she's cackling, but she throws in a little in the cackle. Does? Yeah. If you listen very carefully, you can hear it. It's, okay. It's so
Easter eggs.
Oh yeah.
So, gotta go anyway, see it again.
So yeah, we're kind of exhausted because it's a lot of like running back and forth, grabbing stuff, you know, getting food, feeding the animals, doing all that stuff for me. So I'm just a supportive stage husband and I'm having a blast with it. So,
good. All right.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Yeah. Same. Maren, Thanksgiving week,
but also show week. My show daughter's week. In the show.
Yeah.
And I am her personal hairstylist for the show. So
she's in a lot of different scenes.
She
has
is.
Different things. What's your favorite?
Lots of quick
what's
changes.
Your favorite thing? Do you like her as a poppy, as an Emerald City person?
I think I like her as a poppy. She's just so beautiful as a poppy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a mom and there's my daughter just swaying in the wind. But the jitterbug dance is fun.
Jitterbug.
Really, really fun. And
is that part of the show?
It was added to the musical version of Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because when I
it's
don't
not
know.
In the movie. No.
That's what I was wondering when I watched it. I was like, oh, here, Amy added this weird jitterbug thing. Because, of course, that probably wasn't in the movie. But.
Yeah, no.
No, she's
Desi's doing great.
Yep. I don't have to like shuttle her back and forth. Obviously, she's doing that on her own.
Right.
But I've got family coming in town this week to see the show. I think we have, I literally lost count. I bought 13 tickets and then three more. So 16 people will be joining me.
Thanks for getting
show.
Us over the hump.
Jed's parents were in town over the weekend. They got to see the show.
Yeah.
So it's kind all of right, in the so similar boat as you are, Barry. Just it's the show right
it's
now.
Kind of, it's all the
show.
You
and Thanksgiving.
Are her personal hairstylist. Is that what you said? How would you describe what you've done?
To her hair?
Yeah.
Finger waves.
Okay.
And a couple of little like Cupid doll little curls. In
that's
the
way better than what I would have said.
What would you
I just would have said it's like really tight against her head. I don't know.
It is. It's like a gallon of gel because we don't want the hair to move. She has a lot of quick changes and a lot of different like head pieces as part of her costume. So that was part of the reason for helmet head. We had to keep that hair in place.
Helmet head.
Yes. Yeah.
We did a rehearsal at your house.
Yeah.
For
we led
services.
Worship.
Yeah. We led worship on Sunday and she was very concerned that one of the curls like got stuck in her. Is that what it is? Do-rag?
That's do-rag. You can
that's
say
what
that.
It's called.
It's appropriate. Yeah.
I didn't know if that was like.
I will allow it. But yes, no, she wears this. It's a do-rag, but it's to keep the hair real tight against the
but
head.
But like one of her curls got
down.
Stuck in it.
That's
or something.
Right. Because there's a whole lot of hairspray in there.
Upset.
Yeah. Well, we fixed it.
All right. Good.
We got it. We got it under control.
Yeah. She's doing great. Everybody's doing great.
Honestly,
like the cast is
the
like
cast is phenomenal.
Perfect.
Yeah. Everybody's really, really great. And, where are we in tickets at the moment? Cause last I heard, I mean, we have like a maximum of about 9,000, right? That would be every single show sold out.
I don't know about that. I don't.
Can't we fit like 1,000 people per show or 950 or something like that? So there's 9 total shows, including the school day show. Last I heard we were over 750. So, I mean, that's not far off from almost.
Yeah. We've sold almost 6,500 tickets. Our goal was 7,000 tickets.
Not 750, 7,500. So 65. Okay. Close.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Our goal was 7,000.
So
I think we could probably squeeze 8,000 if all, cause we've got like obstructed views and we've got seats that are like blocked out or whatever.
We only open those up when it sells out. Right. Yeah.
So I think 7,000, 7,000 was our goal and we're at about 6,500. So
I sat in one of those obstructed views on Saturday afternoon and it was still great.
Yeah.
Really?
You might miss a little detail or why is everyone looking up at the sky? Oh, there's Glenda. There she is. Yeah.
My kids came and they were locked in.
Yeah.
But they were especially locked in to the $1 snacks. I'm telling
those concessions are amazing.
If you are like, hey, we're going to go to the movies in the next, 3 months.
buy tickets to this show.
Yeah, come to this show.
load up on
snacks and then take them to the movies because we spent $15 on snacks.
That's like a and carload then,
yeah,
worth
we had,
of concessions.
We had to put stuff in bags.
And all the money goes to support the Care Center Christmas store from our concessions.
Yeah.
It's a win-win-win-win-win.
I think my kids tried to steal something, but I don't know. I got to get this for the full story.
Was
somebody
that
saw
what I was asking you about? I saw your son
crying,
running through the lobby in tears.
Yeah. So either he tried to steal something or he was, I don't know why he'd be lost, but Laura Mitchell was running the checkout at the concessions. And she said, I had to tell your kids to go ask you if you could, they could have more snacks or something.
Oh.
And so I don't know if those two stories are connected, but
there's no way to know.
What was it that, your daughter was saying about Liv?
Oh, that she's very mean.
Yeah.
That
was Lou, 2-year-old Lou was there and it was mid nap. It was like, man, she should be taking a nap right now.
Yeah.
Cause she is nasty. She does not take a nap. But she was drilled in like, man, we were very concerned with the candy there and like, it's dark and whatever. But when she saw Olivia, like she loved it. She just kept being like, Olivia's mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Olivia.
It's jarring.
She's flying and had fire in his, she's mean.
Yeah.
There was one small child, next to me who was in tears, burst out crying, but because of the tornado,
it's kind of scary. Yeah. Scene.
Not the witch, not Olivia being mean, the tornado.
There's a big boom. There's
a lot in there.
Yeah.
It's great. So if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, there's still a couple left for the second weekend, but we anticipate all those going away. So don't wait till the last minute, even though it kind of is last minute, but
you got time. Yeah. You got
there's
this.
Still good seats left.
Sure. What's the big plan for Thanksgiving?
Everybody's coming to my house. Don't you have Thanksgiving at your house?
This year it's my sister's house.
Nice. So,
and then we'll do, I think the next day with Liv's family.
Do you have to bring something?
I'm bringing a dessert, probably that apple crisp I was telling you about. And I don't know, something else. I'll probably bring some appetizer of some kind.
You said apple crisp or apple pie?
Crisp. I don't know. I could do a pie. It's just crisps. I like that you can kind of portion however much you want a lot more easily. Pie, you're kind of committing. Like, I guess I'm going to get a whole slice. And I know you could make a different size slice. But something with a spoon just feels better to me.
I think we've probably talked about this in the past, but like, what do you do for Thanksgiving? Like, what do you eat?
Me?
Yeah.
Sides for days.
Okay, so just
it's plenty.
Load up on sides.
Yeah. That's because I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah.
If you didn't know the context of that question.
Yeah.
Sides for days and it's kind of great.
Thanksgiving sides are the star of the show, in my opinion.
Right.
Although Maren and I have a little competition.
There's been some heated debate going back and forth.
We're going to bring it here.
Buttermilk brine my turkey.
Yeah.
And my friend, my coworker and friend tells me I am wasting my time.
I'm trying to save Maren time because I know so many people are coming to her house.
Yeah.
And she's got to like clean it and stuff.
Yeah.
Wasting my time.
She's wasting her time by brining the turkey. You're wasting your time. Turkeys come pre-brined.
I try to buy, I'm not a butterball person. I'm trying to buy the turkey with the least amount of like preliminary
salt.
Additives.
Yeah, all this
so
stuff.
So even if you don't buy one that's pre-brined, which is hard to do, you're just putting water into your turkey. That's it. That's all you're doing.
Water.
And salt.
Buttermilk.
You're just putting buttermilk into your turkey. And my turkey, you dry brine that thing for 24 hours. You just put some stuff on it, put it in the fridge. It's just as juicy.
And then put it on the big green egg. Well, not all of us have a big green egg, okay?
I don't think that has anything to do with it. I'm just trying to save everybody time.
Some of us just have ovens. Could you imagine?
Well, you apparently need 3 ovens for Thanksgiving.
I do. I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
But everyone's coming to me. I've got 13 additional house guests coming my way.
Well.
And that's just for Thanksgiving itself. And then my dad and his family will come Friday for the show. So it'll be a very, very busy week.
Does it stress you out to have that many people in your house? Or are you just like, we're all together, that's what matters. And
it'll be great when they get here. I'm not stressed when they're here. What stresses me out is what leads up to them getting here.
Yeah.
I have to kick my son out of his bedroom so that I can position a bunch of mattresses on the floor. Like it's just finding
get another oven in there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's finding a place to fit everybody, to make them feel comfortable and welcomed, because they're coming from a really long drive. Like they're going to be tired when they get to my house.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to come in, be fed, relax, go right to sleep, and then the fun can start. But like, you know, tomorrow's going to be grocery shopping day, and then all the prep work for, you know, making stuff. I like to make my sides in advance, save me time on Thursday. It's going to be a marathon the next couple of days, and then the show right after that, which will be super, super fun. So all my nieces and my nephew get to go see the show.
Yeah, no, that'll be fun. I was talking to Jed yesterday at church.
Does he have a different opinion?
No, well, he was excited because you guys were offered the use of someone's home.
Correct.
So that he could take his PlayStation there and, and you guys could have fun at your house.
No. That is not the case. We were, but then I think plans have changed. And now I think it might be that everybody's back in my house.
Okay.
Things are still being finalized there. Yeah, but
I'm sure that's disappointing.
I think he's exactly opposite me. I think he's like
not stressed
before they get here. I think he's stressed upon
when they're here.
Arrival.
He's sleeping in the driveway.
Yeah, I think that stresses him out. Yeah. But I live for it. I love when my house is full of people.
Yep.
What about you?
Well, it's the same thing. We do the same thing every year. Lauren's family, there's like 50 people that come to her mom's house overnight for two nights. And we just smash ourselves into that house. And
you stay overnight?
No, we don't.
I was going to
say. But we're there all day. Yeah. And until we can't keep our eyes open anymore. And then we go home.
Yeah.
And then we show up first thing next morning.
Do you have two Thanksgivings since both of your parents live so close?
No, I think what we're going to do, I don't think we're doing full Thanksgiving, but I think we do all Thanksgiving and then all Black Friday with Lauren's family until Black Friday night. We go to my parents for like an hour. No, we don't do like two Thanksgivings. We just go over there for a little bit.
Well, you spend like every, what is it, Tuesday with your family?
Yeah, every Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, no, Thanksgiving to me is, it's fun, but it's like, I was telling you over the weekend, Marin, that it's like the one time each year that I have to be athletic.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you seemed very worried about that.
Yeah,
on
we
Sunday.
Play football in the yard. We play basketball.
You're not going to play this year, are you? 20 degrees?
Probably.
Windy?
Ugh. Everybody's super competitive.
Okay.
And there's 50 of us. And we play basketball. We go to a gym and rent it out. And there's like 20-year-old kids there that play now. When we first started playing, there were like
nine. How are the
teams
divided? Are you going to like get picked last? Like how does that work?
That is how it works. We have captains, we pick teams. We usually divide it up by height, which is a mistake because I'm taller than the 20-year-old kids. So they think, all right, let's put Tyler, who's like tall, and some guy who's really good on opposite teams, which is not helpful.
No.
So you got to be like, who else hasn't played basketball since last year, Thanksgiving? Now you and Tyler be on separate teams.
How do you pick the captains?
We basically think like who's the best two players here.
Okay.
So we know they're not on
so
the same team.
So they're not on the same team. Uh-huh. And now they can pick teams.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever been last because we're also playing with Lauren's dad, who's like almost 60.
Right. And he,
so they look at me and they're like, well, you're 42. Like you,
whippersnapper.
Yeah. You still got some tread on those tires.
So might be a few nails in there, but
oh,
we have
man.
Never been that family. We've never been the turkey trot family. We've never been.
Oh
the,
yeah, we do that too.
I'm doing the drumstick.
Are you doing
dash,
that? See,
yeah,
but
do
I don't
that.
Run. So like this morning, I went out and ran a mile and a half just to see like how does this feel.
Yeah, everybody
how
does that.
Too.
Fine, it was fine. I mean, I'm working out a lot,
yeah.
But I'm not running, so it was not a problem. I'll be fine for 4.3 miles. I can manage.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe. I've gotten myself out of that every year.
But not
Lauren's
year?
Entire 50 people go do the drumstick dash. Wow. Except one. Well, two now. Me and Lou will stay home. I smoke the turkey. So I got
Your sons are going to do it?
Yeah, they go and they run or walk. Ugh, yeah.
Precious. Yeah, that's not us.
Nope. And then the next morning we wake up and go to Topgolf.
Wow.
So I'm going to be very sore. I'm always sore and I'm always like, this is the last year I'm doing this.
And you're responsible for like a good amount of cooking. You're busy.
Oh man. It's just all on my shoulders. All right. Enough about that. We've gone way too long on that. So let's talk about Matthew. Matthew 18, Barry. Yeah. I don't know what week this is, but we're in the Follow Me series. Probably week four. Five, four.
Well, yeah, four.
It doesn't matter. What matters is you talked about Matthew 18.
I did.
And the kingdom of God. Kind of share with us the big idea, what you talked about.
Yeah, it's a kind of a relatively small, seemingly insignificant passage in light of all the other heavy hitter passages that we've talked about in this series, like Jesus walking on water and the transfiguration and the Sermon on the Mount. Like there's a lot of stuff in Matthew to look at. Why this one? But basically this is a passage where Jesus answers the question, who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God? And his answer is the greatest are the littlest, basically. And he brings a child as an object lesson and says, unless you're willing to be as humble as this little child, you'll be nothing in the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. But it's the little ones who are the greatest. So the big idea is essentially the ones who are smallest in the eyes of the world are the greatest in the eyes of God. And that leaves us with a lot of things to chew on because our human instincts and our cultural, you know, proclivity leads us to make great people the greatest in our hearts and minds, when in reality, we're called to something entirely different and quite radical.
Yeah. You said the, God's kingdom's upside down, which you've said
we say that
many
all the time. Yeah. But the value system of the kingdom of God is almost always the exact opposite of the value system of our world.
Yeah.
The things that we value as human beings and human culture usually is upended when you look at how the kingdom of God is oriented. The poor are blessed, the first are last. It's upside down.
Yeah, I feel like when thinking about like the gospel, like this is it. Like discipleship or following Jesus is like a lifelong retraining of ourselves and like the orientation of what it means to be great in the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do we count as greatness in our lives? And in light of the kingdom of God, it's always like less than, or like you've said like race to the bottom or whatever.
Sure.
It's like,
yeah.
All right. So I have a couple questions. You explained why people would have cared about the answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
Like they want their names carved in stone. It matters to them. Like, what legacy we leave or something. Like it matters to the society of like why this question needed to be answered.
Yeah.
But as we talked about last week, right after the transfiguration, in Matthew 17, Jesus gets off the mountain and some guy's like, hey, my boy needs healed. And he's like, get away. Basically like frustrated, like, right. He's like,
Frustrated because the disciples couldn't cast out a demon.
Right.
But he's like, how long do I have to live with this? Basically.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a, how long do I have to live with this question? The, like, who's the greatest? Like, I feel like it would not have been surprising for him to be like,
enough.
You guys are focusing on the wrong things.
Yeah.
Like why is that your
That is essentially
concern?
What he's saying with the rest of this object lesson. And as I mentioned in the sermon, this is such a frequent thing in the gospels where the disciples are have their eyes focused on getting their names carved in stone, you know, being the greatest, being the top dogs and all of that. It comes up again and again.
Yeah.
So yeah, and the way I summarized it is that in the ancient world, like everybody wanted to matter because most people didn't.
Yeah.
Like your life was short. It was brutal. Most people left nothing behind them other than the memories of people that were going to be gone in a generation. So if you wanted to like have quote unquote eternal life, you had to have your name carved in stone. And that was only going to happen if you mattered in the eyes of the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was very much a focus of, and frankly, it still is. We just it just takes different forms today. But we all want to matter in the eyes of the world. Yeah.
Makes me wonder the tone, like what tone did Jesus say this in? If this is one of those, oh, you of little faith, or how long do I have to suffer you faithless people. Right. If he's exasperated at all.
Yeah. I mean, there's a different, there's like the come on over here, little guy. Yes. Come over here. I want to teach you guys something. Look at this little one. Isn't he adorable? This is what I want you to be like versus here. Come here. Hey buddy, come here. This is what I want you to look like.
Yeah. Basically enough.
Right. That there's a very different tone. And I don't know. Matthew doesn't get across the tonalities of Jesus's emotions.
Unless you turn from your sins and become like little children, you will never get into the kingdom of heaven.
Right.
Not just who's the greatest.
Right.
You ain't even getting in.
Exactly.
Unless you can become like this kid.
Yeah. So he may have been annoyed.
A little bit exasperated.
Matthew 18 starts with about that time the disciples came to him. Mm-hmm. And I just got stuck right there because I was like, about what time? And I went back to chapter 17. About that time, the disciples came to him. Mm-hmm. And I went back to 17 to be like, about what time? What are we talking about? Mm-hmm. And last we checked in on chapter 17, like they were talking to the disciples about the temple tax. Like they were asking Jesus about the temple tax. Mm-hmm. And so about that time they were asking him about the temple tax, the disciples came to Jesus and asked who's the greatest. Like, is there any more context for the beginning of the chapter? Like about what time, like what other context do we need to know about?
Well,
this?
To me, if you really want to think about context, it's the temple tax, but it's also the transfiguration where Peter, James, and John got to go up onto the mountain. It's right before that. It's, you know, upon this rock, I'll build my church. Yeah. And so Peter's kind of looming a little large in those chapters.
So about that time.
It could be that. I mean, that's one way of looking at it. Around that time when Peter was really making a name for himself, the disciples wondered, hey, Jesus, who's actually the greatest?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, is it this guy? I don't know. That's one way of looking at it. It's possible.
Upon this rock, I will build my church. Do you think there was a little jealousy among them?
Could totally be. Yeah.
And then I got stuck again because you went through verses 1-5 and then you went.
Then I skipped
to 10.
And I wish I had more time to do all the other stuff, but it was just can of worms after can of worms.
Yeah.
I know. I wanted to ask.
You wanted to talk about the millstone.
Matthew 18 is so full of stuff. Normally when I think of Matthew 18, I think of the confronting another believer or that little passage right there in the middle of it.
Uh-huh.
How do you even pick what to speak about in Matthew 18?
That is the perennial problem for this entire series. I've been I've been agonizing as I've thrown out stuff. But in this case, I picked this one because, as I said in the sermon, this is a theme that Matthew hits on again and again and again, but we haven't really zeroed in on this theme in one particular message. And so I was like, all right, this is the object lesson we're going to use so we can talk about this theme, which is all over the book. So that's how I landed on this one, but you're right. There's so much stuff and I don't know. There's so much. If we did everything that I think we really could get value in reading through Matthew, it would be 2 years, 100 sermons and
minimum
we'd get there.
This is why Tim spent 4 years in the book of Mark or something.
Right,
like
right,
there's so much
right.
If we were to just go through it.
And that's why I keep saying things like discipleship manual, kingdom manifesto, story of fulfillment, is I'm trying to put little anchors in people's minds so that they will go and read Matthew on their own and start to see some of those same threads. So that's all. I mean, we're doing is a high level overview of the book and just kind of flying through it. So
some things that, you didn't talk about,
okay,
but that you skipped.
Yeah. Go ahead.
From 5 to 10.
Yeah. Cause one of these little ones to stumble.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it'd be better to have a heavy millstone tied around your neck.
I don't know if there's a way to know this,
but
talking about, like, we just talked about, like, we imagined his tone and talking about these children and whatever. Is there a way to know if, like, somebody after the fact was like, hey, let's insert all this really intense stuff, consequences? Because it's like, when I'm reading this, I'm picturing Jesus, like, it's all like bright and sunny. And he's like, and anyone who welcomes a child like this on my behalf is welcoming me. And then, like, dark rain clouds just like immediately swoop in. And he's like, but if anyone causes one of these to stumble, like, and there's like all, it's like, you might as well throw a millstone around your neck and drown in the sea. And if your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. And then back in verse 10, he's like, but beware, you don't look down on it. Like the clouds go away and it's back to sunny. He's like, don't look down on any of these little ones.
Yeah. So
did people, like, is there a way to know, like, man, we got to enter all this like bad consequence stuff. Or what do you think? Like, he really said that in that way.
So, well, I mean, there's no way to know. Matthew will, and this is obviously debated. Not everyone agrees with this way of reading Matthew, but it's clear to me at least that Matthew does put different moments and stories together on purpose as a way of capturing ideas and threads, themes and of thought. I actually don't think that he's changing topics here at all.
Oh,
I think this is all connected. When you look at, when you step back and look at the broad theme of Matthew, what I didn't really find a place to get into, and I didn't want to confuse anybody, but little ones, mikros, is actually a really common phrase that Jesus uses to describe essentially his followers slash the people he cares about. He talks about them all the time, and it's not just about children. And so here he's got a child. Mm-hmm. He calls these children mikros, these mm-hmm. little ones. And then he starts to essentially talk about all the little ones mm-hmm. that he, you know, that are part of his worldview. And I mean, for example, we'll talk about this in spring when we get to this passage, but, in Matthew 25, where he talks about the least of these, he's using the word mikros, the little ones of these, the, even the smallest of these. So he's talking about people who were hungry and thirsty and, mm-hmm. and homeless. And so all that to say, when he talks about the stumbling blocks, that's what he literally mm-hmm. says. Anyone who puts a stumbling block before one of these little ones, mm-hmm. it connects to a much broader theme of essentially the religious leaders of Israel who are causing hardship and exclusion to these people that Jesus cares so deeply about. They are keeping these nobodies away from the temple because they don't have the status. They're keeping them out of their society because they are, they're undesirables or whatever, mm-hmm. or they're sinful or whatever. And so essentially what they're doing is they are putting up barriers between these little ones and the Father. Like they are actually putting up blocks that are causing them to stumble. So it's, I don't know that calling it that the translation causing them to sin is entirely accurate. I think it's more like if you are in any way an impediment to the people I care about, the little ones of our world, if you are standing in the way of them coming to the Father, coming to God, you are in for a world of hurt because you are actually like standing face. You are literally standing in the way of God's purposes.
Yeah.
So it'd be better to have a giant millstone tied to your neck and just get thrown in the sea because you are standing in the way of what God cares about the most. So
it just got really intense after like, oh, let's pull this child. Cause growing up you hear the story. It's like, I just picture him like holding a sheep.
Yeah.
And holding a child.
Sheep and a child.
Yeah. And it's like,
put me down, please.
Tie the millstone.
That was the sheep.
All right. So I did get a question about the mikros.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody about this and I've had discussions with other people in regards to some of the people that all three of us have experienced, especially in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. With like the disabled folks and the orphans, they would be probably mikros.
Absolutely, right? They would. Yeah.
So the core of the question that I got that I don't know if everybody feels equipped to answer this type of question, but it's essentially like, if God cares so much about mikros mm-hmm. or the little ones, why does he still allow them or why does he still allow so many of them to suffer or stay invisible in our world? Mm-hmm.
And that probably comes directly from the verse where he says, it is not my Father's will that even one of these little ones should perish.
Right.
Right. So if that's the case, then why are they suffering? That's a great question.
I heard an audible reaction at the 11 o'clock service to that verse in particular, that it's not his will that even one of them should perish.
Right.
And I think too many of us are familiar with too many tragic stories that it makes us all say, okay, well then why?
Yeah, right.
Well, and here's where the passage that we skipped over comes into play, and it gets into a massive can of worms related to the will of God. But one way of looking at the will of God is, you know, what God says is done. Full stop. So if it's his will, it will happen. So then we've got something confused in our own minds when we're asking that question. The other way of looking at it is that God's will is essentially like his desire made real. His desire is that not a single one of these little ones would perish, but he leaves it up to us whether we are going to fulfill that will or not. That's the whole idea. Like, we can choose to put stumbling blocks in front of these little ones and somehow actually stand in the way of the will of God. One way of thinking about the kingdom is that it is the realm in which God's will is complete and is perfect. So in other words, when the kingdom of God is here, then everything that God wills mm-hmm. comes to be. But in the world of that humans have made for ourselves, God's will is sometimes stood against because he has given us the ability to go against his will. He's given us the ability to rebel and to choose something other than him. And so that's one way of looking at that verse is that it's not God's desire that any single one of these little ones will perish, but it's up to us to actually make sure that his desire is made manifest. That, again, is a can of worms
yeah.
about free will and well, determinism.
Sickness and disease.
Yeah, sickness and disease, right.
A result of the fall. Like, we would say right. we live in a broken world. Like, it isn't just why do little ones suffer at the hands of yeah. oppressive regimes. It's, I think the question goes beyond that. Right. You know, it's right. the, why does God let bad things happen to good people? It's that yeah, classic
totally,
question.
Totally. And I'm with you on that. Sickness and disease notwithstanding. Right. Like, a world in which orphans are not discarded, that's the world of God's will. The world in which people with disabilities are welcomed into community mm-hmm.
yeah.
and given absolute equal access to everything and our people are setting themselves aside to lift up those who have challenges, that is God's will.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's where it's like, okay, setting aside the mm-hmm. things that are outside of our control, right. we do have the ability to create a world that does align with God's desires. And I mean, now we're getting really meta here, but over the course of human history, we also have been given gifts by God, like the ability to have scientific minds to discover cures to diseases. We can create a world where, you know, preventable diseases are eradicated, where children can be saved from these, where childhood mortality is not yeah. 50%. Like, again, that, we're getting yeah. into like a yeah. huge conversation here, but I do think there's a capacity in which we, even when it comes to diseases and stuff, where we as a community can make advances closer to the will of God in caring for the little ones.
Yeah. And have a responsibility in that sense
yeah.
to bring his kingdom to bear.
After a lot of years of wrestling with this tension myself, I mean, one of the sermons that, because it was so like illustrative, that I try to remember is your sermon, Maren, about the light in the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
God, there is no light at the tunnel. God's in the tunnel
yeah.
with you, right? So like after many years of wrestling with this tension, I've come to believe that I don't know that I think, so my biggest or like closest proximity to this question, it has been in Ukraine. It's mm-hmm. been at the orphanage, Romanov. It's been with the people over there who are disabled. And for a lot of years, I was asking this question. I was like, what purpose do those people serve if they have yeah. no purpose? And like,
yeah.
You know, they have no freedom to even make their own choices about like their existence or whatever. So, I think that I've come to believe that I don't think, God's indifferent to these people. I think God's care shows up for these people in a couple of ways. So number one is the tunnel thing. Like, God himself became Mikros, right? Mm-hmm. Because he became a human being who suffered.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like he became
humiliated
Mikros.
Himself. Yes.
So if you are Mikros, there is something for you to connect with the God of the universe mm-hmm. about. And like, if you are Mikros suffering, the God of the universe also did that.
Yeah.
That's one way in which he cares for us. He's in the tunnel. Number two, the cross and the resurrection have the same hope for Mikros, for people. Do we just call them Mikros?
Sure.
Like people who are Mikros, or do we say Mikros? Like,
well,
the Mikros.
Sure. The Mikros. Just say the little ones.
All right. The little ones. The cross and resurrection have the hope for the little ones, just like everybody else. Like that's another yeah. way that he cares for them. And the third one is church. I believe that church is like supposed to be a preview of the cross and like the resurrection.
Yeah.
And being it's supposed to be a preview of things set right and centering on these things that you were talking about in the mm-hmm. kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. And defending people who the world ignores. I believe that like the church is supposed to be that. If you ask people in the community, what is the church supposed to do? They will say,
yeah,
this stuff.
Yeah. Right.
So I believe that the church is the third way God in which God cares for the little ones right. of our, right. of our world.
Yeah. And yeah. at our best, again, to reiterate, at our best, when the church is really doing exactly what we're here to do, that is squarely in line with the will of God. Mm-hmm. So, but again, yeah. This all depends on having a view of the will of God that also makes room for free will and human. If you've got a purely deterministic view of God's will, then no matter what God desires is going to happen. And therefore, if there is suffering, somehow God yeah. desires it. That's just not really how I think about the will of God.
Yeah.
I see it in this intense dynamic with human will. And he entirely gives us, not entirely, but he opens the door for us to participate with him in his will or not. That's why Jesus prays, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Because it is done in heaven. God's will is in heaven no matter what. But man, might it be happening here on earth too? And can we be a part of that? That's the prayer that Jesus teaches his disciples to pray.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want to have that podcast where we talk about that for like an hour.
No, but that's where we're going. So yeah. let's change. Let's keep going.
You kind of took us there.
Yeah. All right, moving on.
You're the host. I mean,
All right. So the one thing that did, grind my gears?
Yeah.
Can I give you a grind my gears?
Do it. Something I said or something Jesus said? Out of curiosity.
Probably something Jesus said, I guess.
Okay.
So it's like a little convicting, but I'm curious if, how it seems very anti-ambition.
Mm-hmm.
Giving up the quest, you said, giving up the quest to carve our names into stone, willingly join the ranks of the forgotten.
I did say that.
If I'm not paying very close attention to like the nuances of what you're saying, I'd be tempted to believe that I should not have ambition for things like wanting influence or leadership or excellence or mm-hmm. greatness. Is that, as a Christian, should we have those things? Should we have the ambition for those things? Or is it more nuanced than that?
It's a really good question. I don't think ambition, this is me just shooting from the hip, and Maren, I want to hear what you have to say about this, but I don't think ambition as an idea is necessarily, I think it's a neutral thing. Ambition is a human motivation, and I think it's a normal part of human life to be ambitious, to have a desire to grow, to take, to build. Like that's normal. That's part of human beings. What I want to know is what is the ambition that's driving us? Because an ambition to, I am ambitious to use whatever influence I have to make as much of God's will real on the earth as possible, to care for as many mikros as possible, to make sure the gospel is spread and the truth is planted in my life. That kind of ambition, that's 100% godly. I think that's exactly what we're meant to have. And frankly, I wish Christians had more of it, right? But what is ambition often driving us to? It's often driving us towards selfish ends. I'm ambitious for power. I'm ambitious for wealth. I'm ambitious for status and prestige. And when that's our ambition, when that's our driving motivation or force in life, that's when I think we really start to miss the heart of God, because we end up focusing the North Star of our life becomes me and not him.
Yeah.
So I think it's, what is the ambition based on, or what is it for? That's where the question to me comes into.
So it's like redefining it.
I think so.
I would say what you just said, what is it for? To what end? I think we just spent 3 weeks talking about Peter, and we saw a lot of ambition in Peter, and eventually he uses that ambition to spread the gospel wherever he goes, and he dies by crucifixion, but all because of his ambition for the kingdom.
Right.
His ends were God's ends. His ends were kingdom ends. So ambition is great. Ambition, I think, is a God-given thing. You know, we need to be able to accomplish things and have dreams and goals and aspirations. But again, the question is it just to, I don't know, fill your pockets or have a bigger house, or is it to further the kingdom?
I think the Apostle Paul was very ambitious. He talks a lot about like, I, I want to win the race. I mean, he doesn't use this word, but like, I want to take the hill. I want to do that. But he's like, and I want to see Christ glorified, Christ right. crucified. I want to proclaim that to the ends of the earth and give my entire life to that. That's his ambition, you know? Yeah. And so again, that's very different than saying, I am going to be the head of a Fortune 500 company or die trying.
Mm-hmm. So like, that I can be,
so that I can be
idolized
famous
and respected yeah, right, right, and right, have right, the right. coolest car.
Nothing
and
wrong with Fortune 500 companies. I'm just saying if there's a different kind of ambition.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just watching something last night. This is a tiny example, but it was a doctor somewhere in Wisconsin who helped so many people and he saved so many lives. And this was like a tribute to him. He just passed away and he was an organ donor. And even in death, he saved 3 more lives.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great ambition.
Yeah. Yeah
you
yeah.
know, that's the kind of legacy that I would love to leave behind. Just yeah. mm-hmm. that she was ambitious for the right ends, the yeah. right purposes.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. If my life is lived in such a way that at the end of my life, other people become more like Jesus, that's the ambition I have. That's what I want my life to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, to me,
but
I don't.
But if it's yourself, then you're yeah, in the crosshairs of this.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And that's why this is so provocative. Even now, we're like, we're wired to self, we're to focus on self. And so this takes whole life renunciation. Like this is not an easy call. And it's yeah. why the disciples are like, we'll see next weekend. Jose Luis will have something to say about this when he talks about the rich young ruler that walks away sad because he can't give away his wealth to follow Christ. He goes away sad. And the disciples immediately say, well, then who can be saved? Like, this is hard. What do you do? This is really difficult, Jesus.
The sermon connects humility with humiliation. You were talking about that. You're like, instead of thinking of like really just humble and humility, think of like what we would think of as humiliation. Like,
that's one of those things I think of as a pretty basic difference between the way that we think about humility and the way the ancients did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We think of it as a virtue. We think of it, we look for humble leaders, whereas they would turn their noses up at humbleness. Cause nobody wants to be humbled.
So I started to think about what it would actually look like if, we as disciples of Christ embraced humiliation in a Christ-like, way rather than chasing, respectability or whatever it is. So what do you guys think it would look like tangibly or practically if we embraced humiliation in the ways that you're talking about as a people, as a disciple?
Say that question again. That was a long question. What does it look like if
what
we embrace
would it look
humility?
Like if we, if we embrace humiliation in a Christ-like way rather than our pursuit for whatever it is, pursuit for respectability or ambition like we were just talking about or whatever. Like, what would it practically look like if we all embraced humiliation?
Well, how about this? We talk all the time about the toxic online world of everyone posting their stuff. What if someone comes out and they just call you out for something and they're like, blah, 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 you're the worst, whatever, and you don't respond? That's humiliation because you're allowing them to have the last word.
Happened to someone.
I'm just saying that's one example.
Love can afford to lose.
Love can afford to lose. What if you allowed someone else to quote unquote win an argument and you just chose, gave up your right to be right? That's humiliation. Like, what if you chose to, here to take it another way. What if you chose to give away your entire Christmas bonus instead of spending it on yourself? That's humiliation in a way, because you're missing out on something that is quote unquote rightfully yours. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of ways to practice humiliation. Maybe that isn't the best example, but you know what I'm saying?
That is a great example. Even for me, am I going to buy, an extra sweater? Like, am I going to spend the money on myself? Or am I thinking of others? Am I putting others ahead of myself? Where can I give? I think that's a fantastic example.
Yeah.
I was talking to Maren before the podcast about this because this more than anything else, like, smacked me in the face. And I heard the sermon. I've heard the sermon 4 times now.
Twice because we were doing
worship and I was there for all of it. And then twice today, just like going over everything.
Okay.
Because sometimes, I don't know, Maren, do you feel this way? Like if you're leading worship, like I'm thinking about that mm-hmm. and I'm sitting through a sermon. I'm like, when do I have to be back? And like, what's the cue? And when do I, and so I'm not fully
not fully engaged
like I usually am.
Yeah. I can be fully engaged for like the first two thirds of the message, but then like the latter half of it is like, all right, I don't want to miss my cue.
So yesterday mid 11 o'clock service, which is when I was like the most focused on what you were saying. I got like super convicted.
About time.
About this thing, like the humiliation part. Like mid service. And this is to some people, this may be like a silly example, but, it's one that I think it illustrates what it would look like if I'll just speak for myself. If I embraced Christ-like humiliation. So all week long as we're preparing for worship, or I'm preparing for worship, I'm practicing these songs or whatever. It's me, Jaden, and Maren kind of preparing for this. I kept talking to them about how I try to sing songs, or like I try to sing the songs like in the original key or whatever. Like even Tim Hayward was like, what key do you want these songs in? I'm like, whatever the recording is, that's what I wanted in. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even listen to him. I was just like, I can do it no matter what key it is.
I'm laughing because you've done that for as long as I've known you. Like, hey, Tyler, I was thinking about having you sing this song. You good with this key? Can you listen to it? And without listening to it,
I never listened to it.
Yeah, whatever it is,
key,
I can do.
Yeah, whatever key it is, I'll do it.
So you're always singing like,
or super high.
I'm trying to help you, but you will not be helped.
No. So while we were rehearsing at Maren and Jaden's house, someone, I don't remember if it was you or Jaden, but someone was like, hey, can we lower the key of one of these songs?
100% me.
Oh, yeah, it was you because you were like, I'm phoning it in.
That's right.
Like I'm phoning it in.
Wait,
like,
who's phoning it in?
It was me. The key was a little high. And I said, I could do it in this key, but I'm phoning it in. Like, I'm kind of cheating the notes instead of like really giving them all I got. Like, we could do it. It just won't be as good. Because I ain't too proud to beg.
Yeah. And I am. And so I basically told them, like, oh, I would never do that. Like, I would never sit in a room full of people and like ask them to lower the key for me. I would never do that.
Gotcha.
You're so competitive.
Yeah. Well, we ended up lowering the key for two of the songs. And it was the right decision. Like the songs were way better that way.
Yeah.
But had it been left to me and I was by myself and Maren and Jaden weren't there, I would have just like white knuckled my way through these songs and just like, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have changed the key and I probably would have strained my voice or something. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
To make myself sing the songs in higher keys. And it's because I want to prove to myself that I belong in the arena. I think is what, as I've thought about this more and more, I'm like, I'm not like the best guitarist. I'm not the best singer. I'm not the best, whatever, musician. But one thing I know I can do in my life, throughout my life, has been I could sing a variety of ranges of songs. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to be up there, I'm going to do that. It shows the world that I'm competent. It shows the world that like I am worthy of the world's respect. It shows myself that I like belong here. And so it's a thing that I like, it's always after the fact, but after the fact, I'm always like, man, that's like so false self, like driven. And it's part of my brokenness. It's like, why can't you just like admit something and you have to like, I don't know, make it about yourself or whatever. So I was thinking like humility in light of the sermon or humiliation looks like admitting my limits. I mean, this is a silly example, but it looks like admitting my limits and asking for help instead of pretending that I'm competent or pretending that I can do something that it would be better if I just took the advice of Maren and just like lowered the key or whatever.
Sure.
That's humiliating to me. Like, in a weird way, that was like some kind of defeat. It was
Admitting that she's right. You're admitting that.
Well, it wasn't even about her.
Well, but you're admitting that, like,
guys, I'm right here.
That you're,
I'm right here.
You're admitting
one
that
day
you're
we'll
not
tell Maren it wasn't about her. Yeah.
I get it. I see what you're saying. But for what it's worth, I lost a ton of respect for you when you changed keys this weekend.
Yeah, see, I knew somebody would notice.
I never would have even thought. But the end result
was beautiful. I loved the worship set. I loved worshiping with them. I loved worshiping with the church. I loved, like, one of my favorite, when we are doing acoustic worship, no matter how much like I prepare for it or don't prepare, one of my favorite things to do during acoustic worship is to like step off the microphone and listen to everybody singing. So I did that a couple times, and mm-hmm. like, that's beautiful. And that probably would have happened had I not changed the key, but like the end result was worshiping the Father with church, which mm-hmm. is the best. Mm-hmm. But for me, humiliation just looked like admitting when, not a failure, but kind of just admitting my limits and asking for help.
Yeah.
That is humiliation.
Which is so ironic, because I keep hearing you say that even that slight change, lowering the key, whatever, in the end, it made the end result better.
Yeah.
I framed it as, hey, play to your strengths. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to try to fit a certain mold that you think you need to fit, or reach for this aspiration that it only exists in your head and literally nowhere else. Like, let's play to our strengths, to the strength of me and my vocal range, you and your vocal range, and what's going to be best instead of some unattainable, like unreachable thing that we've set for ourselves. In the end, humility created something better.
Totally. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah. And so sometimes I think we think, okay, humiliation sounds very negative and it sounds like the path to loss or, you know, some sort of diminished capacity, when really the pathway of humiliation is the pathway to something beautiful, or the pathway to something perhaps even better.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, what it is the pathway to is powerful kingdom authority. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the entire rubric. We don't often talk about that, but that path of descent is the path to actually meaning something. He says anyone who humbles themselves will be exalted.
Yeah.
It's that's when the Spirit, you know, works through you in such a powerful way. This is the reason that like people who, as they get very, very old, will often turn into the best people you know, or the worst people you know, is because at some point they began the path of humility. Mm-hmm. And as they go down that path of humility, especially if they're following Christ and they're becoming more and more like him, they become people of authority, people with power, people with presence, purely because they are giving themselves away. And that's the reason. But those who have been focused on themselves, that path leads them to be bitter and cynical. And the moment life starts taking things away from them, their free will, their ability to move around, like, that's when they start to become the most awful, twisted versions of themselves. Yeah. And so it's like, it comes with benefits to give yourself away. Mm-hmm. You become more like Christ. And through that, you experience power and transformative presence. Spiritual authority comes through the path of, what was that ladder of influence? Remember that? Mm-hmm. I don't remember all the rungs of it, but it was like brokenness is where it starts.
Yeah.
And that humiliation.
Yeah.
And you work your way from there to spiritual authority, but it starts through brokenness.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention that, the humiliation part. And the last thing I wanted to mention is how much, like, I started thinking about, like, how do we as Christians or church kind of like determine if we're doing a good job in light of the kingdom? Mm. So I started thinking about that, and the last thing I really want to talk about is like how happy it made me for Grace Church, which, I guess now I have to like think about the pride I have in my own church, like confess that, but. It made me proud of Grace.
How about the joy you have in God's activity and through Grace Church?
Thank you. Thank you for making that better. But it made me thankful for this church. And when I put this church up against the Matthew 18, I don't know. I'll ask you guys, when you put Grace Church up against Matthew 18 and the kingdom of God and meat cross and all that stuff, like, what do you guys think of?
I mean,
well,
go
obviously
ahead.
We care. We care for the little ones in in our care, in our community. And you mentioned a few of them at the end of your sermon as you were rattling off, you know, the poor and the needy,
yeah,
and the outcast and the immigrant, yeah, and the person with disabilities. And we really do try to live out the, yeah, things that we, yeah, preach on the weekend, because, yeah, to us, this is the call of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Christianity.
I'll give you a very specific example. I think I shared this email with you guys, but someone, a Grace Attender shared.
Yeah, I had this going through my head too.
Okay, a Grace Attender shared a story. So we're doing the musical and we do this school day performance. The first one that we do is filled with kids from different schools and homeschool kids. And anyway, a lot of the kids, many of the kids came from schools that have programs for kids with special needs. And one of the kids that came, I believe is on the autism spectrum. And she, whenever she's listening to music or especially live music, will yell out lyrics because she really wants to be able to read along,
yeah,
with the music so that she knows what's being said. And so Amy Christie, our director/pastor, she heard about that. And so she made sure that they had printed lyrics for every song in the entire show, mm-hmm, that she could look at. And so that they could hand it to her. Here's this next song. And she could read along so that she didn't even have to call out lyrics.
Yeah.
She already had them in front of her. And this Grace Attender, who was with this young woman, was just bowled over that we would care enough to go to those lengths. And what my reaction was, that doesn't actually seem like that big of a deal. Of course we would, yeah, do that. And I say, of course, and I'm not patting us on the back. I just think it's becoming part of our DNA that, yeah, we'll go to those extra lengths. We make room for, yeah, for people. And that's a part of what that looks like. And so I feel that sense of pride in who we're becoming as well, even though I don't think it's a sinful pride. I think it's a joy at what God is doing, as you said, Maren. But like, that's one example, yeah, one tiny example of like, yeah, we'll go the extra mile to make sure that everybody can enjoy the artistic, yeah, gifts that God has given this community.
Yeah. I had that example in my head too, when I was thinking about this, because if churches are honest, I think churches measure their success on things like attendance and budgets and growing the budget and how people know about us and what they know about us. So our brand and our resources and things like that. But I think what the sermon did and should do is it pushes us to ask questions like how do the little ones experience life when they are with us?
Yeah.
How do the little ones experience life when they are with us? How do our resources go toward the little ones, or keeping, or are our resources going toward the little ones, or are they just resource money and things like that? Are they going towards making, I don't know, quote unquote, the insiders more comfortable? Are we known for pastors known for our availability and our gentleness, or are we known for our charisma and control? Like, those are, mm-hmm, other things that, mm-hmm, this sermon should push us to ask about ourselves. And then I got to say, like, when I started going down that list of like, what questions do I have? Like, it just made me really happy about this church. Mm. So I'm glad that we work here. I'm glad that we're here.
Me too.
Yeah.
I always say who we're becoming, because depending on how you look at it, we have so much farther to go, but we have made such great progress, and I can see the character of our church. And it's not just the pastors, it's the staff, it's the volunteers, it's the congregants. Like, you can see the spirit of Grace Church spreading and being infectious. And that to me is just, there's often something that new people will say when they come here. They say, there's just something about the people here. It's something about this place. It's just like, it's magnetic, it's attractive, but it's not charisma and flash. It's something real, mm-hmm, that I think, yeah, I pray that continues to grow in us. And yeah, I think it's irresistible if we get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we're grateful for what we see. I understand why you would say the word proud, and I understand what you mean by that, but I think another swap could be grateful. We're just so grateful,
mm-hmm, yeah,
for the work of God in this place, for who he is creating us to be and has created us to be. And yeah, we're a mixed bag. It's not like we've got everything, you know, super down. We're figuring things out, and God is causing us to grow, but he's building his church.
Mm-hmm.
All right, where do we go next? What are we going to do?
Well, we are going to, well, we're not actually going to pause Matthew because we're going to stay in Matthew, but we're going to end part two and go into part three. But the next sermon is going to be Jose Luis Gonzalez, guest speaker from our Venezuelan community. He is going to be preaching about the rich young ruler, as he's often referred to, the young man who walks away sad because he can't quite go all the way to give up what matters to him to follow Jesus. And Jose Luis has prepared a great sermon. I'm very excited for this. And that's what's next. And then we dive into our Christmas series, 4 weeks on Matthew's account of the Magi.
Speaking of walking away sad.
Okay.
Yesterday I was with you talking to Jose Luis and you were like, hey, is everything like settled? Like, are we all good? Like, did you get what you need with whatever? And he's like, yeah, they canceled my song.
Oh no.
You're like, what happened? What? It's like, I don't know. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. You know, whatever. And, but we canceled his song for some reason.
I don't know.
So then I walked away sad.
I don't think that's, I don't know all that happened. He had some ideas for things that he wanted to do. Yeah. I think it'll still work and he may still sing. I am encouraging him to still sing, even if it's just a cappella as a part of the sermon. So, it'll be okay.
Yeah, Barry was like, hey, I'm about to check out for the week, but is everything good? And he's like, they canceled my song. He's like, oh.
I don't know. I don't know what went down.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I'm hearing all this for
we'll
the
talk about
time.
This with him next week.
Will we?
Yeah.
Why'd they cancel your song, man? Yeah. What's the deal with that?
Yeah. All right. We'll be back next week, and he will be here, and can't wait for that. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Maren, will you please send us out?
I will. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.